Hey gang, welcome back to Bloody Bizarre.
My name's Emma.
I'm Sarah. Thanks for joining us again.
We hope you liked last week's episode, Sherry Papini.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you weren't aware of that one, I feel like most people would be, but it's such an insane one that, like, you know.
Yeah, it is.
What is this podcast if not for telling crazy stories like that?
Yeah, like Bloody Bizarre is what that is.
Yes, exactly.
Anything you want to say at the beginning?
Just thank you for being patient with us. At the moment, this is a particularly busy time in my life because I have a baby and a toddler and I've just gone back to work as well. So I do not have a day where I'm like just on my own to do anything. So yeah, we try and fit this in because it's very fun for us, but shut the fuck up. If you're one of those people that has an obnoxiously loud car, just know everyone hates you.
Oh, that took a turn. That went from a thank you to a fuck you.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, look, we do appreciate it. Obviously, I don't have kids, but I...
You're also busy because your job is quite important these days. Emma's a bigwig.
That's not true.
You are. I've seen you wearing blazers at the airport.
Yeah, I guess I do wear blazers.
In the business lounge.
Yeah. All right. If there's nothing else, I'm going to get started.
Okay.
Okay. So my sources today. Forensic Files, episode 1.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. The very first episode.
Jeez, what year was that? 1960?
No idea. My Favorite Murder, episode 170, entitled Habeas Delicious.
Okay.
Wikipedia, newstimes.com article by Kevin McMurray, morbidology.com article by Emily G. Thompson, newtownb.com article by Andrew Gorosko, and a memorandum of decision from Rogers V. Crafts.
Okay.
You know, I love my court documents. So today I'm going to tell you about the disappearance and murder of Hella Crafts.
Okay. Her name is Hella.
Hella. She was Dutch, I think.
I was going to say, yeah.
Or Norwegian, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Denmark.
Denmark, yeah.
Have you heard this story?
No.
You might have heard it before.
Okay.
Maybe when I get into it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, this one.
Right.
So Hella Crafts was born Hella Lork Nielsen on July 7, 1947 in Charlottenlund, Denmark. She was vibrant, outgoing. She made friends easily. She was incredibly smart. By her 10 years, she had learned French, English, German, Norwegian, and Swedish.
Jesus.
No Spanish there, though. Hella had a face that looked very friendly. There's some... So she was a member of... So she was cabin crew. She worked cabin crew for a Norwegian airline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a cabin crew face, I think, of people like women and men that look very friendly. And yeah. You feel at ease when you see them on the plane.
Yeah.
She had one of those faces.
Yep. I'm looking at her now.
Oh, you Googled her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a very kind of a lovely looking woman. She seems open and friendly.
Yeah. Nice smile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When Hella was 20, she became a flight attendant for a Danish airline, as I said. It was a great fit for Hella because she loved exploring new places and being the kind of friendly, outgoing person that she was.
Mm-hmm.
She then found out that Pan America, also known as Pan Am, was hiring. So along with 200 other applicants, Hella applied for one of 8 positions.
Wow.
Hella was successful,
mm-hmm.
and she joined the Pan Am cabin crew. She was sent to Miami for training, and it was there in 1969 that she met the 31-year-old Richard Crafts. He was a pilot for Eastern Airlines, and in contrast to Hella, I don't think Richard looked very friendly. Have a look. I think certainly, like, my knowledge of this case influences my opinion. I don't want to give anything away, but I think everyone kind of knows where this is going already. he looked like a bit of a... stern individual, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, one of the photos is him like in handcuffs.
Doesn't necessarily mean he did it.
No.
When Hella and Richard met, he was actually already engaged to someone else, but he and Hella hooked up. They maintained an on and off again relationship. Apparently their romance is quite volatile. They do fight often, sometimes in public. Hella's friends, unsurprisingly, did not like Richard. They thought Hella, she could get any guy she wanted, and she's with this fucking boring, ugly douchebag motherfucker. Like,
tell us my how you
words.
Really feel.
Yeah, my words. It's but yeah, like, and like we know so many people like this. Like, they could have anyone they wanted, and they choose some fucking dud.
Yeah,
men and women. Like,
yeah.
You're like, what the fuck are you doing?
What do you see?
Yeah. And yeah, how is your self esteem that low that you?
my thought is, Richard is different with her in private, perhaps.
Well, they fought a lot.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
And the way this story goes, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think, whatever. Eventually, in 1975, Hella finds out that she's pregnant with Richard's child. And this prompts them to decide to get married. When Richard was asked later why the pair got married, he said, quote, "Hella was pregnant at the time we were married. It was too far advanced for a doctor to perform an abortion, and we decided to get married."
Wow, that's so romantic.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's fucking too far along. Well, we got
him. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to. Great. Yeah. Great, I'm stuck with this beautiful, smart woman.
Yeah. Oh, and a fucking kid. Yeah. Great.
They bought a house together in Newtown, Connecticut. I did my usual Google map walk around the town. Mm. It seems like a really delightful place. I think most places in Connecticut are very kind of like waspy. Very like, you know. Mm-hmm. And this place looks no different. It's like, you know, the classic.
Manicured gardens.
Yeah, and, yep. white houses. Yep. Like, yeah. After a few years, the pair have two more kids, so they end up with three. Mm-hmm. Despite earning a very good salary of around $120,000 a year, Richard,
in the 70s?
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes. Richard also picked up part-time work being an auxiliary police officer. And so from what I understand, this is basically a person who supports full-time law enforcement officers, like basically doing kind of like menial work.
Right.
That they don't like necessarily have time for, that a civilian could do.
It kind of sounds like he just didn't want to be.
Be home
with his family.
Yeah. It also, I think, like, ordinarily this would be fine if this was just a regular person not in one of our stories, but so often we talk about people that are obsessed with
power
and like law enforcement and
Richard
seemed to really like executing what little power he had as well. So he bought the exact same car that police drove. He attached wires to it to make it look like a police car. Like, he'd pull people over.
Was he allowed to do that?
I don't think so. He'd show up to the police station when it wasn't his shift.
And the cops were like,
fuck off. Yeah.
You dork.
They were like, fly. And yeah, like, he would happily exert any power he had over his town folk, like writing tickets and stuff like that.
Sounds like a snitch.
Yep. Meanwhile, Hella is still working as a member of the Pan Am cabin crew while also raising their three children. Richard's off doing whatever the fuck. So time's moving along. The marriage, despite the three children, is quite rocky. Although I think, I don't know why I said despite the three children, because often children make marriages worse.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I guess, understandably.
Yeah.
And
it's going to add pressure.
And the marriage didn't start off great. So yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Their arguments continue. Richard is often unfaithful. So he started as he meant to go on. And apparently he'd even started cheating on Hella before the pair were married. So I'm guessing this is in between him cheating on his ex-fiance with Hella and after he's broken off with the ex-fiance and proposed to Hella, there's still a web of affairs in between that period. Okay. He just can't help. He can't help himself. And he's not like an attractive guy.
No, but he's a pilot. So
I guess.
I bet there's like a bit of pull there.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, if I see a pilot walking through an airport that's even wildly attractive, I'm like, hello.
Yeah, it's hot. Like,
those epaulets.
You know what? It's hot.
He would apparently disappear for days without telling anyone where he was going. Mm-hmm. Just like she wouldn't know where he was and he just would not come home for like days on end.
Those poor kids.
Yeah.
Where's dad? Fuck knows.
Also, not directly related, but he also began to collect a bunch of guns.
Don't like that.
Mm. It's now 1986. In the months leading up to her disappearance, Hella had discovered some suspicious phone calls, and she believed that Richard was up to his old philandering ways, and she confronted Richard. This obviously enraged him, and it led to yet another argument, but Richard vehemently denied the allegations. In the meantime, our girl Hella met with a divorce attorney, and she hired a private investigator to look into Richard and the cheating suspicions.
Good girl.
Yeah. This investigator was named Keith Mayo. Mayo pretty quickly was able to confirm that Richard was indeed having an affair. He snapped photos of Richard kissing another flight attendant outside her New Jersey residence. And not only was he seen kissing this woman, but he'd actually been in a relationship with this other flight attendant, for years.
Oh, so it was like a full-on affair.
Full-on relationship.
Yeah.
As well as other infidelities as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So not only is he cheating on his wife.
He's cheating on his mistress.
Yes. Fuck. Yeah. So now Hella has proof of Richard's infidelity. She files for divorce. Despite having reason to use adultery as the reason for the divorce, Hella files for a no-fault divorce.
Hmm. So she's trying to protect his reputation somewhat.
Well, I think she knows Richard's violent. She's like, I don't want to do anything to piss him off. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to make this more contentious than necessary. Yeah. I'll file for no-fault divorce. Let's just get it over with.
Yep, you go your way, I'll go mine.
I'm not blaming you, you know, whatever. She just wanted out.
Yep.
So the divorce papers were written up, but before they could be served, on November 18, 1986, Hella was dropped off at her house in Newtown by friends after she'd just finished a long shift where she'd flown from Frankfurt, Germany.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So Hella was dropped off by two cabin crew friends who actually knew about the relationship with Richard. Mm. And they noted that Richard was home that evening. And so they were like, oh. And Hella was like, oh, like, Richard's home. Great. Like, you know.
This is going to be awkward.
Yeah. Yep. So Hella was dropped off that evening and she was never seen again.
Oh, God.
So the next morning, November 19, Richard said he was taking Hella and their children to his sister's house in Westport. When he arrived, Hella wasn't with him. It was just Richard and the kids. Over the next few weeks, Richard gave Hella's friends a variety of stories as to why they were unable to reach her, that she was visiting her mother in Denmark, that she was visiting the Canary Islands with a friend, or even just as weak as he didn't know where she was.
Right.
Like, he was the one that disappeared, not her.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess, like, if he's the one that's doing that, he's like, well, other people must do it too.
Yeah, that's normal to just, like, randomly disappear. Doesn't everyone do that?
So, Hella's friends were aware that Richard had a volatile temper, and they obviously grew concerned.
Yeah, was this a, was he violent towards Hella?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hella had told some of them, quote, if something happens to me, don't assume it was an accident. Hella had also told the divorce lawyers that she feared for her life and that he had been physically abusive in the past. So this is the time, what do we know about domestic violence relationships and when it's the most dangerous?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's when the woman is preparing to leave.
Yeah. And obviously Hella was. She had the divorce papers written up.
Preparing to leave and the time just after they've left.
Yep.
So I'll just chuck in here that anyone that's like, why doesn't she just leave? Just keep that in mind, that just leaving is the time when women are most likely, well, victims are most likely to be killed.
Yes, yes. I don't think any of our listeners would be making those kind of comments, but, you know.
Yeah. It's just something that I still see so often and it makes me so angry.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think people are getting better at kind of educating themselves on the myriad reasons why
it's not just,
victim wouldn't leave.
Yeah, it's not just as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this story. So on December 1st, the private investigator Keith Mayo reported Hella missing. So it wasn't the husband that reported her missing. Yeah. Keith Mayo reported her missing to the Newtown police.
I bet the investigator was also like, this guy's dodgy as.
Keith Mayo is a fucking prince.
Is he?
Yes. I also heard that one of Hella's co-workers also reported her missing at the same time. It doesn't matter too much, but a fellow flight attendant named Rita also reported her missing.
Right.
Mayo believed that Richard was involved in Hella's disappearance and he told the police as much. Richard Crafts, Hella's husband, obviously was known to local law enforcement for his work as the auxiliary officer.
Mm-hmm.
According to Mayo, Newtown police initially dismissed his concerns, saying that Hella would probably return, and besides, Richard had passed a polygraph test.
Mm.
and they knew Richard, like that's their auxiliary mate.
Yeah.
You know, he's always fucking hanging around. And so Keith Mayo, the private investigator, his work with Hella is done. He has proved that Richard was cheating. That's what he was paid for.
Mm-hmm.
He's already made his suspicions clear to the police. I think at this point he would be forgiven for just going, like, washing his hands with it, going, well, you know, that was a former client. I've said my bit to the police. If they move on with it, whatever, right? But instead, Richard decides that there must be evidence to point Richard as the responsible party for the disappearance and ultimately the death of Hella.
It's quite telling that he was kind of like, I know the police are not going to do their due diligence here. I'm going to have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So Mayo starts looking for evidence, okay? He finds in the papers provided by Hella a receipt for a chainsaw.
Oh, no.
If you're going to speak, you have to speak closer to the mic.
I said, oh, no.
He then learns that the au pair said that Richard had cut a dark grapefruit-sized stain out of the carpet and taken it to a local dump. Now, Keith Mayo finds out from the local waste authority which dump the Crafts rubbish would have been taken to. He then goes to that dump, which is about 2 hours away. He recruits a few other people to help him, and over the next few days, they search through trash mountains to find the Crafts rubbish. Their hard work pays off because they find a piece of rug identical to that of the Crafts with a brown stain on it.
Oh my God.
Mayo decides to bypass the local police, and instead he took his findings to the county prosecutor, who eventually referred the case to the Connecticut State Police. And on December 26, while Richard was vacationing with his children in Florida, while his wife is missing, I'll remind you, troopers searched his home.
Nice.
Inside, they find the pieces of carpet that were taken from the master bedroom floor. Sorry, they found where the pieces of carpet were taken from in the master bedroom.
So they could match it in. And
correct.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a blood smear on the side of the bed mattress. Bed mattress. Mattress. As opposed to the floor mattress.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. I believe they call it a futon.
Not the couch mattress.
No, yeah. Their luminol tests showed the presence of blood in other locations too. The forensic investigation was actually led by Dr. Henry Lee. Now, that name might sound familiar because he is, I think, the most famous forensic pathologist that exists in the modern times. Some more notable cases he's worked on include the death of JonBenet Ramsey, the O.J. Simpson case, Lacey Peterson, the 9/11 forensic investigation, and the D.C. snipers.
Right.
So he's one of the most respected, although I think recently he was found guilty of, like, not testing something and saying that he did or something like that, that led to a false conviction.
Oh, wow.
I think, yeah, okay. I think in 2023 or something like that. But that's not this case. Anyway, Richard's credit card records showed a number of unusual purchases around the time Hella vanished. These included a freezer that could not be located, new bed sheets and comforters, and of course, the chainsaw. Also, a side note here, after Hella went missing, Richard didn't take a breath from his affairs. He just he just continued seeing these women. And even to the women that knew he was married, he didn't mention to them that his wife was missing. So,
just didn't give a shit.
Did not give two shits. He was just fucking around, getting his dick wet. I hate that saying, but it's like,
yeah, it's so gross.
It's so gross.
You compare that to last week's husband, Keith Papini, when his wife went missing.
Yes,
like the comparison is just chalk
stark
and cheese.
Yeah. So Hella's disappearance starts to make the rounds on the news. At which point, local snowplow driver, Mr. Plow, Joseph Hine, comes forward with a key piece of evidence. On the night of November 18, so this is when Hella's dropped off by her friends, hours after Hella had been last seen, Hine was ploughing the roads during a snowstorm when he noticed a rental truck with a wood chipper attached.
A wood chipper.
Correct. It was parked close to the shore of Lake Zoa, and Hine actually knew Richard just locally. And he confirmed that it was him that was towing the wood chipper. He noticed it because he was like, who the fuck is operating a wood chipper in a snowstorm? And at night as well.
Yeah.
So he led detectives to the location where he had seen the wood chipper. So detectives examined the water's edge and they found many small pieces of metal and some 3 ounces, that's 85 grams, of human tissue.
Oh, no.
Including the crown of a tooth, a fingernail covered in pink, a fingernail with pink nail polish, part of a thumb, part of a skull, other bone chips, 2,660 bleach blonde human hairs, and O-type blood, which was the same type as Hellacraft's. And they also found part of a mail slip that belonged to Hella. You can actually see these remains online if you want to check them out.
Can you even tell what they are from how, like, small they are?
You can tell what the thumb is, yeah. So this led the police to conclude that the remains had likely been... that Hella's remains had likely been fed through the wood chipper.
Jesus Christ.
That Richard had been seen towing.
Yeah. God, I hope she was already dead.
Yeah. So they... I'll put you out in misery. They assumed she was already dead.
Did they assume that?
They assumed that.
Okay.
I
mean, she might not have been.
No, she probably was, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So that chainsaw that he had been known to purchase, that contained traces of blonde human hair and was found underwater. So she was probably cut up with that chainsaw.
Okay, so he potentially cut her up and then put her through the wood chipper.
Correct, yeah.
Jesus, and, so violent.
And I'm blowing my load early here, but the freezer that was missing, he probably froze her, chopped her up, then put her through the chipper.
But the wood chipper, that was the night she went missing.
Yes.
So he couldn't have put her in the freezer for long. Or was there like a day or two in between or something?
There must have been because, hang on, let me keep going. I think you've...
I've got that detective brain, you
know. I think you've just uncovered a chink in my story. they found that chainsaw underwater with human hair in it. Though the serial number marking on the chainsaw had been scrubbed away, the investigators were able to restore the number in the laboratory. And the serial number on the tool was traced to the retailer whose records confirmed that Richard Crafts had purchased the chainsaw.
Yeah.
Investigators concluded that Richard had struck Hella in the head with something blunt at least twice, staining the carpet with blood. He then kept her body in the freezer for hours until she was frozen solid. So it would only take a few hours, I guess, to freeze a human body solid.
Right, yeah.
He then cut her apart with the chainsaw. He then put the pieces through the wood chipper, probably projecting her fragmented remains into the truck and then shoveling them out onto the shore. A prosecution for homicide requires an official determination of the death of the alleged victim. So typically this is done by the identification of a body. Obviously, this was not available in this case.
Well, they had fragments of her body.
Yeah. So the legal term is corpus delicti, which translates to body of the crime. And in, like, Western law, it's the principle that a crime must be proven to have occurred before a person can be convicted of having committed that crime.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Hale is a law philosopher or a lawyer. I'm not sure, but he's the term, the saying no body, no crime, that's his, Matthew Hale. Right. So that was commonly thought that would be the case. So if the police couldn't find a body, then they can't commit someone of a crime. But this case is the first in Connecticut law to where they managed to get a conviction without a body.
Yeah. Well, again, like, they didn't have her complete body, but they had parts of her body.
Yes. And in the 20th century, the law has expanded to allow prosecution for murder solely on circumstantial evidence.
Right, yeah.
If there's enough circumstantial evidence, you can be prosecuted.
Yeah.
And be found guilty.
Yeah.
So with the help of a forensic dentist, the tooth crown found on the water's edge was positively matched to Hella's dental records. I'll tell you now, this is before DNA identification was widespread.
Yeah.
And so they were able to use that tooth crown identification to make the small leap that the rest of the remains are likely Hella's as well. And then they were able to use that as an identification that the remains that they found, all 85 grams of them or whatever it was Hella.
Yeah, what are the chances that two separate people have been put through a wood chipper?
That's right. Yeah. So on this evidence, the Connecticut State Medical Examiner's Office issued a death certificate on January 13, 1987. Richard was immediately arrested. get the fuck out of here, you pig.
Yeah.
In preparation for trial, state medical examiner H. Wayne Carver obtained a pig carcass, not Richard, but a different pig carcass, and fed it through a wood chipper. The shape of and marks on the pig's bone chips after this process were similar to the shape of Hella's bone fragments. So this kind of strengthened the state's hypothesis that Richard had used a wood chipper to dispose of his wife's body.
Yeah.
So Richard Craft's murder trial began in May 1988 in New London. It was moved there due to the extensive publicity that it was receiving in the hometown.
Yeah.
During his trial, the couple's housekeeper, Dawn Marie Thomas, told the courtroom that on the day of Hella's disappearance, Richard had allowed her to go home early.
Mm-hmm.
She also said she'd witnessed the couple have an argument just several days before the disappearance. Dawn also testified that Richard had removed a freezer and a carpet with a large black stain from their home just a couple of days after Hella disappeared. When Dawn asked about the peculiar stain, Richard told her that he had spilled kerosene on it and that he didn't want her to clean it. Now, Richard was clearly unaware that kerosene does not leave a stain.
And I bet the housekeeper knew that as well and was like,
okay,
Richard.
Yeah.
Whatever you say. I'm not going to argue with you.
The following day, the carpet was gone. She also told the court that the freezer was working just fine when Richard decided to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Richard's brother-in-law testified that when police divers were searching the lakes and the waterways for Hella's body, Richard had remarked, "Let them dive. There's no body. It's gone." Fucking hell, Richard.
God.
Keep it in your mouth.
He just doesn't think he's going to get caught. So he just is like, well,
nobody, no crime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That sounded a little Trumpy.
Yeah,
my accent. Yeah. So testimony from Hella's friend, Susan Lauston, said that she'd, quote, expressed fear for her safety from conversations and dealings she had with Richard and was concerned that he may harm her. Lauston also told the court that Richard had physically abused Hella before and that he had lied about having colon cancer as a ploy to make her cancel the divorce.
I don't understand. Why did he even want to be with her? He obviously didn't love her. He was cheating on her constantly. He didn't like being at home with her and the kids. Why do you even not, like, why do you care about the divorce? Money?
I think it's multifaceted. I think, one, it's control.
Yeah.
I think also he likes the idea of having this image of being the pilot the with man. The family. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think also it's a bit of, well, you can't leave me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Pride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's all fucking bullshit, but.
Yeah. It's just so crazy. Like, if Greg came to me and was like, I want to get a divorce, like, I would be, you know, heartbroken and stuff, but I'd be like, oh, fuck, okay. Like, if you,
you'd be
if
like,
that's what you want.
This has been coming, like, I knew I was on borrowed time.
But, like, my first thought would not be, like, how dare you do that to me?
Yeah. Like, this is a slight against my pride, yes, my personality. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm gonna bonk you on the head and freeze you and then...
and put you through a wood chipper.
Yeah. So, yeah, he lied about having colon cancer as a kind of way to make her cancel the divorce.
Yeah.
Hella, however, she's so fucking, like, on it. She had called Richard's doctor regarding the colon cancer, and he had told her that it was very much untrue and that Richard was well.
Lol, that the doctor's just like, look, there's this thing called patient confidentiality, but just between you and me.
Yeah.
It's full of shit.
Yeah. I hate him too, girl.
Thank yeah.
Richard maintained his innocence throughout the trial, saying that Hella had just disappeared. Great. So the case went to jury after 54 days, and on July 15th, 1988, the 17th day of jury deliberations, one single juror, the only juror in favour of acquittal, refused to continue, and the judge had to declare a mistrial. Don't worry, though. A second trial in Norwalk ended in a guilty verdict on November 21st, 1989, after only 8 hours.
I want to know who that juror was.
I know, right?
And what link they had.
So I think I've heard this before. This could be from a different case, but I think I heard that this particular juror was like, well, I have reasonable doubt because I can't actually see the crime being committed. Like, there's no video of it. And so he thought... that reasonable doubt meant, well, I can't be absolutely sure. I can't be 100% sure that he did it. So I have to acquit. Like, I have to acquit him. Like, yeah, he would just
really like black and white.
He did not understand the concept of reasonable doubt.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I seem distracted. There's a car out there that has stopped and they have their lights on, so they're still in the car.
It's probably an Uber Eats driver.
No, they've been there for like 10 minutes.
Okay. I sometimes stop on roads. You know, when we're talking about...
I don't like it.
When we're talking about Idaho and Brian Koberger and how he would just drive around random streets.
Yeah.
And we were both like, well, I do that sometimes.
Yeah, I suppose.
But just take a note of him. What time is it? It's 11:59.
It's a black Mercedes SUV type vehicle.
Oh, and a Mercedes is up to no. He's up to nothing.
Can't see the
he the must be rich. Plate. Okay, well, focus up.
Okay.
So, Richard's own sister, who now had custody of the couple's three children, she urged the judge to impose the maximum sentence. So she was like, "My brother's a wrong one.
He's a piece of shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get rid of him."
Yeah.
Richard was sentenced to serve 50 years in prison.
Right.
Great. Right.
Mm.
And as I said, this was the state's first murder conviction ever without a body.
Yeah.
Keith Mayo, Heller's private investigator, who was instrumental in getting the murder investigation started, he also sent a letter to police commissioner, to the police commissioner, demanding an investigation into why the Newtown police didn't take Heller's disappearance seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really unfortunately, Keith Mayo died from injuries suffered in a car accident in 1999. He was only 46.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. Keith Mayo, beautiful man, dies in a car crash.
Has done such good.
While Richard Crafts is just living.
Yeah.
JK living.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully living like a shitty existence.
Okay, well, but let me tell you. Another unfortunately. On January 30, 2020, Richard was released from prison.
What? That's not 50 years.
It is not 50 years. He was sent to live at a halfway house in Bridgeport. Richard was released early because of statutory good time, which allows sentences to be shortened for good behaviour and jailhouse jobs. So he only served about 30 years of his 50-year sentence. The last thing I could find on Richard Crafts was that he had been moved from that halfway house to a homeless shelter for veterans, and I think he's just walking free now.
How old is he?
Well,
it being what his,
I think he's in his like 70s or 80s.
Or
yeah.
80s.
Yeah. But he's just free.
He gets to
live out his final days as a free man.
Yeah.
After having brutally murdered and disposed of his wife's.
His wife, the mother of his children.
Yes. A wonderful, by all accounts, woman.
Yeah. For no reason other than his pride was hurt.
Yeah. And he's a lousy adulterer.
Yeah, he was cheating on her. He was treating her like shit. He was violent.
Yes.
And when she went, okay, enough is enough. We need to get divorced. He was like, he went, how dare you? I am going to kill you instead.
Is that him?
Yes.
I don't know what. I reckon he's got a party up there and he didn't want to arrive too early. That's what I'd do. We'll see. If he doesn't come back down, he's gone to a house up there. And it's a cul-de-sac, so.
We'll see him come back.
The special edition DVD of the 1996 film Fargo. Have you seen Fargo,
no.
The movie?
No.
It's good. Okay. I watched it here with Jen and Dan, who are listeners. Hey, Jen and Dan. It contains a statement that the Crafts case actually inspired the film, particularly the very end of the film, where a character played by Steve Buscemi is killed and his body is put through a wood chipper.
Oh.
Yeah. In court notes from a hearing about Crafts' property and the rights to said property, it was officially noted that, quote, the evidence disclosed and the court finds that Heller Crafts was a loving and committed mother who was actively involved in her children's lives and activities, including membership in the Hawley School PTA, involvement with the children's soccer teams, and other of the children's activities. The court further finds that Heller Crafts was a vibrant and active person who enjoyed the company and companionship of her friends and her family. She had her own hobbies, interests, and generally enjoyed life pursuits. And that is the case and disappearance and murder of Heller Crafts by piece of fucking shit Richard Crafts.
I cannot believe that they let him out.
I know.
That makes me so angry.
I know. They were doing a lot of that during COVID because they were trying to reduce the prison populations because COVID, they didn't want it to spread as easily. And so they were releasing people like him. Meanwhile, those with weed convictions were sat in prisons.
Yeah. How does that make sense? Just let the people go who have, you know, well, like, you know before, drugs, whatever.
Like a few weeks before he left office, President Biden pardoned a whole bunch of weed convictions.
Good. Stupid.
It is stupid. It's fucking ridiculous that a drug that is now legal in a lot of states,
yeah,
there are still people sitting in prison for those crimes. It's fucking ridiculous.
And then somebody like him.
Somebody like Richard fucking Crafts.
Yeah.
God, I want to punch his face. So, yeah, that's that.
Wow.
I hope that everyone's angry with me.
So many of these cases would just end up being like, I'm outraged after that.
Yeah.
The world is so unfair. Oh, God damn it.
So, yeah. Do you remember that case? Have you heard that one?
No, I don't. It doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. Well, you would have listened to that My Favourite Murder, I'm sure.
Is it a recent one?
Well, 170 or something like that. 185, I think.
I don't know. It was a long time. I haven't listened to My Favourite Murder for ages. I'm still in the back catalogue of Ologies.
Right.
Because I had like 5 years worth of Ologies episodes to catch up on.
Sure. Yeah, well, so yeah, it's a wild case, and it's
they just left.
They also call it the wood chipper murder, but I didn't want to.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh God. Okay. Yeah. Well,
poor Hella and her children.
Yeah,
I think they hate their dad. Which
I hope they hate.
I hope they hate their dad too.
God.
So yeah, that's that.
Okay. I don't know what I'm going to tell you next time. I can't remember.
I already know what I'm doing the one after that, so...
Yeah, you've already finished yours, haven't you?
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening, everyone. Tell your friends, like, rate, review, whatever. And yes, spread the word. Mm-hmm. Spread the good word that Bloody Bizarre is back.
Shout it from the rooftops.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.